Hello, 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 and welcome to the First Taste reading series on the Day Beautiful podcast feed. I'm Adam Fitcavage, and on this version of the podcast, I invite a writer to read from their debut book so readers can get a first taste of exactly what they're in for. If you like what you hear here, check us out on daybeautiful.net and on all social media at daybeautiful. Today's guest is a Korean-American writer from New Jersey, currently living in Brooklyn, New York. She is a recipient of a Pushcart Prize and is the 2021-2022 Center for Fiction Emerging Writing Fellow and holds an MFA in Fiction from the New School. Her debut novel, Sea Change, was a Day Beautiful Best Debut of 2023, and her debut short story collection, Green Frog, is out now. Please welcome Gina Chung. Hey, Gina, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Adam. Thanks so much for having me. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. Excited to have you back. Breaking the rules of what a debut is, I'm putting that in air quotes. I chatted with you for your debut novel, Sea Change, and love your work so much. Now you have a debut short story collection, Green Frog. And I guess I'll ask, because I think you're the first person I've done this for. How do you feel about the whole debut novel, debut short story? Do you care? Does it matter? How are you feeling?
Yeah, no, thank you for that. And for all the support. I love Day Beautiful. And I'm just so pleased to be talking with you again. I was just thinking to myself, I was like, oh, maybe I'll just like do a book in another genre now so I can just keep being a debut. Yeah. Next up is like debut memoir or something like that, yeah. Which I probably wouldn't do because I find writing about myself to be excruciating in nonfiction form, although so much love and respect for the people who can. But yeah, no, I feel good. I mean, this is book two for me, and it is a debut short story collection. And I'm not a parent, but I keep telling people that it feels like having the second kid in the world. And I say this because I am the oldest in my family, and I have a younger sister who's 9 years younger than me. So it's like a sizable age gap. And when my parents had my sister, they were kind of just like so much more chill and relaxed about it than they were with me. I don't know if this is a thing other like oldest kids and families can relate to. So obviously it's not a similar situation. It's not exactly the same, nor is it a similar gap between Sea Change and Green Frog coming up. But I feel, you know, it's been like a year-ish since the first book came out into the world. So I feel like I have a bit more of a handle on just what it's like to have a book in the world and sort of like all the excitement around it, and also have a better sense, crucially, of like what I can handle. So I'm just trying to be like as present as I can, and also just be mindful of like my own capacity through the process as well, which is always like a fun and interesting kind of equation to balance, especially when you're in kind of the thick of it with like events and things like that. But yeah, early reception for the book has been really supportive and lovely. I got my first like starred review, which was really exciting.
Yeah.
For a pre-publication review. So yeah, I feel really excited to be out. Really excited and grateful to be out in the world with like another book with like kind of similar themes and concerns as Sea Change, but with like a whole new cast of characters, especially with it being a short story collection. Yeah. There's so many different like worlds and voices and people that I feel like I got to play with a little bit more in this book.
Yeah. And then like, speaking of that, I always, when I talk about short story collections, I'm just like, I personally, Adam, am bad at saying, oh, you know, it explores like a character who's going through a midlife crisis and like, you know, like touching on all the different short stories. I just say it's like, this vibe is what I get. But how do you explain Green Frog to people who are curious about picking it up?
Yeah, I would say that the collection, you know, as I mentioned, has a lot of themes in common with Sea Change, although it's explored in different lenses and point of views. But I would say, broadly speaking, a lot of the stories build on themes of Korean American girlhood and womanhood, bodies, animals, and transformation as a means of survival. And what I mean by that is just this idea of like characters who have to sort of change in order to kind of survive or just make sense of like where the particular juncture that their life is at the moment that we meet them in the stories. And sometimes the transformation is like very physical and kind of literal in some of the stories, sometimes it's more of like an internal shift or a change in perspective that the character is undergoing. So yeah, and a lot of these stories were also inspired by folk tales and fairy tales that I heard growing up as a kid growing up in a Korean immigrant family. And so some of those stories are, in the case of the title story, Green Frog, it's like inspired by a folk tale called The Green Frog or Jeonggaeguri in Korean. And other stories are just kind of me wondering about various scenarios that like I maybe encountered in the real world and thinking about how I could sort of heighten it by adding some sort of strangeness or magic or something else to it.
Definitely. What story will you be reading an excerpt from today?
So I am going to read from the very first story in the collection, which is called How to Eat Your Own Heart. And it's basically a story that's kind of in a recipe format for how to eat your own heart.
Sweet. Take it away.
Step one, draw the water into a stainless steel or copper pot. What it's made of isn't that important. What is important is that the pot be made of a material that you can dimly catch your own reflection in, the faintest outline of your face peering back up at you before the small blue flames on your stovetop warm the water into motion. But resist the urge to look closely, to trade your pot for a mirror, as that is not what you are here to do. Step two, add sea salt, more than you think you will need. Scatter the crystals into your hand and throw them into the water as though they are rice and you are the only guest at the world's smallest and saddest wedding. Stir until the salt dissolves, becoming a ghostly veil. Repeat until the water tastes like the sea, so salty it burns the inside of your mouth, scrapes your throat, makes your taste buds shrivel. Avoid watching the pot because waiting for the expected to happen is energy you no longer need to expend. Walk away if you must. Step three, once the water comes to a rolling boil, lean over the pot and feel its hot steam kiss your face. Whisper to it the names of your mother, your aunts, your grandmother, until it knows everything you know, steeped in the women who have come before you, who taught you this recipe and have perfected it over the years to ease their own heartaches through wars and ghosts and children born dead and faithless husbands and family members never seen again. If you don't know your grandmother's name, don't call your mother to ask. Instead, remember that being able to know the first names of your elders is a luxury. Speaking them aloud, even if to yourself, is a small heresy. Step four, your knife should already be sharpened. If it isn't, hone the blade against a stone, the edge of a plate, a nail file. Remember that a dull knife is more dangerous than a sharp one. A sharp knife is biddable, easy to wield, but a dull one can turn on its master as quickly as a starving dog. You'll know you're done when the blade whistles through the air. Do not hold it like you are afraid, or it will dance out of your hands and cut your fingers to ribbons until red pearls over your scarred wooden cutting board, staining everything. Step five, chop scallions, ginger, and garlic into half moons, crescents, slivers. Allow any stray pieces to fall from your cutting board and onto the floor. Lick the sticky acidity of the garlic off the blade of your knife and let it bloom in your mouth like an earthy flower until the metallic taste of your own fear is gone. Step six, cut an onion in half. Remove the root and its papery jacket and the translucent layer inside. Bury the root in a plot of earth or keep it in the back of your freezer for stock because what can be used again should be saved, as your grandmother had once told you. Cut each hemisphere of the onion into three parts, using one hand to steady it and the other to slice. If your eyes smart, angle your tears into the pot, making the brine of your body useful for once. Step seven, aim the knife at yourself, your breastbone. Slowly, carefully, use the tip of the blade to trace a large circle around your nipple, cutting through the fat and tissue until your flesh opens like a door. From there, it will be easy to pull your heart out of its socket. Remember all the times you would have eagerly traded away this small, aching bundle of valves and ventricles for nothing more than a look, a promise, the touch of a hand. Be glad that no one ever took you up on your offer. Hinge your chest closed again. Sew up the wound with kitchen twine or one of your own hairs. A safety pin held in place and attached to the fabric of your shirt or apron will do in a pinch. Note, you may feel a small jolt once your heart has exited your body, but pay it no mind. Remind it that you've been through worse, like the time a boyfriend left you on a crowded train in another country during an argument, or the time a dining chair in your childhood home sailed across the room to strike the wall behind your mother, propelled by your father in one of his rages. A blade parting the surface of your skin is nothing, nothing. Step eight, Plunge your heart into the boiling water the way you would a lobster. But there is no danger of your heart trying to escape, to scrabble at the sides of the pot in a desperate bid for freedom. Your heart is no crustacean, no hardy beast reared and shaped on the ocean floors over years of evolution. It is tender, foolish, easily shocked into submission. After 5 minutes, remove it from the water and plunge it into an ice bath. Stroke its rounded shape with one finger like it is a spooked fish or a bird that refuses to fly until its wild beating stills.
Thank you so much to Gina Chung for reading from her debut short story collection, Green Frog, which is out now. Get it at your favorite local independent bookstore or at bookshop.org. You can find her on the internet at gina-chung.com. That's Gina-Chung for all of those who love to call it a dash. You can find her on Twitter and Instagram at GinaTheChung. You can find Day Beautiful at daybeautiful.net and on all social media at daybeautiful. And as always, I'm Adam. This is Day Beautiful, and you're all beautiful. Thank you so much to Rita for joining the First Taste Reading Series here on the Day Beautiful podcast feed. You can get her debut novel and debut short story collection, Headshot and Belly Up, at your local favorite independent bookstore or at bookshop.org. You can find her at ritabullwinkle.com and follow her on Instagram and Twitter at Rita Bullwinkle. You can find Day Beautiful at daybeautiful.net and on all social media at Day Beautiful. And as always, I'm Adam. This is Day Beautiful. And you're all beautiful.